it's a growth mindset. I always say that owning a business is just a playground for personal and professional growth. And to the extent that you succeed at the personal and professional growth, you get the financial growth. Everybody wants the financial growth, but I'm like, the receiving part only happens after you've given. So you have to be the one giving.
In the world of franchising, where does one find the balance between entrepreneurship and successful business models? Today on Seek Go Create, we're joined by Kim Daly, one of America's top franchise consultants, a thought leader, and a guiding light for those venturing into the world of franchises. With 20 years of experience, Kim has transformed lives, turning aspiring business owners into successful franchisepreneurs. From her early days in the health and fitness industry to establishing the largest franchise consulting business, Kim's journey is a testament to her expertise and passion for empowering others. Beyond her professional achievements, Kim is a dedicated mother, fitness enthusiast, and a beach lover, proving that it's possible to blend personal passions with professional success. Kim, welcome to Seek Go Create.
Oh, thank you so much, Tim. I'm excited to be here.
I'm excited. I'm in Arizona. You're in southern New Hampshire. So we're on almost opposite sides of the country, but we're going to have some fun here. I've done some research on you, but when somebody meets you and they ask you what you do, what do you typically tell people?
Ooh, because franchise consultant is not clear. No, this is what I typically say. I help people invest in franchise businesses. And they say, franchise businesses? Like what? And I say, well, I'm a broker, if you will, for about 300 to 400 different brands. So for the last 20 years, I've been helping people who are at some sort of fork in the road, looking for more passion, freedom, financial freedom, quality of life, break free from the 9-to-5 or the W-2 job. Maybe they are alternative investors who own apartments or Airbnbs, but they're looking for diversification. And then they find out that franchising could be an option. And I help them solve for that problem to figure out if franchising is a good investment for them based on their background, their interests, their skills, their finances, and their goals.
So what's your experience? When I hear franchise, I've been a business junkie for 40 years now. When you bring up the term franchise, do you find that the general public, people out there, the masses, do they know what you're talking about, or are they confused by it? I mean, do they think, oh, McDonald's, or, you know, well, what's your experience there? Because to me, I would sit here and go, everybody knows what that means. But maybe not.
Yes, it's an excellent question. So it definitely depends on the audience. The vast majority of people, they hear franchise, they think food and retail. As America's top franchise consultant, I stand on my soapbox every day and tell people, you will have to beg me to show you food and I'm not bringing you retail. So then they're like, what else is there, right? So, and then if you talk to an MBA crowd or people who went to Harvard or Yale, and they've been taught that entrepreneurship is the mecca. That's my greatest challenge, is to help them understand the leverage and the scale that you have in a franchise to be able to enter a market and in 3 to 5 years build and scale to wealth, versus as an entrepreneur, you might spend 3 to 5 years just perfecting your model. So if wealth creation is the goal, franchisepreneurs win all day long over entrepreneurs.
Is that a word, and I'm not saying this in a negative way, is that a word you made up? Did you make up franchise?
It is a word I made up. Yeah, I didn't make it up because somebody else owns the domain, franchisepreneur.com. But yes, I do. I'm probably the one who throws around that word the most in the industry.
It's a little bit of a tongue tie, because when I was reading the intros, I was going, a franchise, that's a lot of sounds in there. But I think it says a lot. I mean, we here on this podcast, we have talked to people that have been involved with franchise. Some people that are the owners of businesses that have franchised. I've actually worked with some in my practice. And then also people that do somewhat what you do. And then a lot of entrepreneurs. And so I told you I might hit you with some tough questions with a little bit of cynicism in them. So that's, I'm doing it with a smile for those people that may not see the video, but Hello, Seek, Go, Create listeners. This is Tim Wenders. Let's take a short break. Have you ever caught yourself dreaming about a future where your leadership not only achieves its goals, but also inspires those around you? As an executive coach, I specialize in transforming those dreams into achievable visions. With my coaching, we don't just chase goals, we create legacies. Drawing from my own experiences and a faith-driven approach, I help you align your professional ambitions with your deepest values, ensuring a journey that is both successful and fulfilling. If you're ready to carve a path that is authentically yours, it's time for us to talk. Visit timwenders.com/coaching to schedule a free discovery coaching call. Yes, you and I'll just get on the phone and have a call. Again, that's timwenders.com/coaching, and you could read some more information and then schedule a call right on my calendar. Let's turn your vision into reality. Now back to Seek, Go, Create. There are some entrepreneurs, which is a weird word in our culture, we might unpack that a little bit, that they might look down upon someone who is plugging into, we'll talk more about this later, a system or something that's not being invented from total scratch.
Yep.
So when someone—
That's 1,000% true.
Yeah. So when someone says that, what is your— I don't see your head spinning around and you're not, you know, turning green or anything like that. But when someone brings that up, what is your nice response, or what is your mean response? Whichever one you want to give me, I'm okay with.
Well, I'm always going to be nice, Tim, but because everybody is where they are. And look, if we didn't have entrepreneurs, I would never have any new franchises coming to market. So we do need people to invent things from scratch. But the vast majority of people that want to own a business are doing it for the goal of freedom. That's personal, professional, and financial freedom. Well, if somebody has gone out there and already proven how to make money in a certain business, and you can pay a small fee for everything they've learned that took them years, and take that proven toolbox and then go have at it and scale that business to build wealth. So again, in those same 3 to 5 years that entrepreneur is perfecting the model, figuring out who the customer is, how to find the customer, what's the messaging, where do we spend those advertising dollars, how many advertising dollars. Then once the lead comes in, how do we convert? What's the price point? How do we overcome the competition? What's our competitive advantage? All of those things, when you're an entrepreneur, that doesn't make you money. That's the figuring out part. Well, when you're a franchisepreneur, all of that's already been figured out for you. So you pay the franchise fee, you get instant access to all the ready-made tools so you can hit the ground running and then apply your engine of go to it and scale. And the wealth is always created through scale. So it's never going to be about one team, one truck, or one location. It's about how do I scale my time to apply that to multiple teams, trucks, or locations. And so that leverage is built in. And I would argue that franchising really doesn't work out for single operators. That's not where franchising shines. Where franchising shines is on the wealth creation part because of the innate scale that's built into the model. Does that make sense?
Yeah, it does. And the good thing about it is, and what I may do here is I may mention a few things, and then I'm going to go down a different path for a moment, and then we're going to come back to some of this. But I love that we can have a conversation about entrepreneurship and franchises and business, and probably even with you, I've listened to your podcast, mindset and other things that are going to be a lot of value to anyone listening in. But pause that for right now. Kim, one of the things that we really dig down on here at Seek, Go, Create is we really unpack this word success, talk about redefining it. We don't use the word failure. We talk about experiences, things like that. And I see in your information that for 20 years you've been doing this. And I also love the energy and passion that you have when you talk about it. That's really cool. But what I want to do this for just a second here. I want to talk briefly about Kim. I want to know more about your origin story, as is sometimes a term we use, or how you came to be in this field. I see where you've got, you know, health and fitness is a passion of yours. There's, I know you're a mom, you're in Southern New Hampshire. So let's kind of go back to before maybe franchises were part of your ethos and all that you were. And just tell me anything that might, I don't know, something that might be helpful for us just to know you more.
Well, this is where my passion for franchising comes from and why, you know, an advocate for franchisepreneurship over entrepreneurship. So I've been basically self-employed my entire life. I was on my way to medical school. I answered a classified ad in the newspaper, which was for a franchise company, not the one I'm a part of today. That ad obviously changed the trajectory of my life. But I got in working for the franchise and I learned about business ownership. And I thought from day one, this is what I want to do. At 25, I left that job and I started my first company. Now I was really successful. It was at the dawn of the internet. So I was able to get my health and fitness company partnered with usatoday.com. So if you went to usatoday.com and you clicked on health and fitness, it clicked over to my company called Be Healthy Now. So because of this national exposure, I mean, my business was a trajectory. So, you know, we wanted to do all these things, but we didn't, it wasn't, the internet back then wasn't like today, like community. What does that mean? There were so many different ways to build a community that today don't even exist anymore, right? So, and then there were things like, you know, people wanted to advertise with me, but they didn't have a website because this was a new thing. So I was like, I would hang up the phone and I would tell my guys, they're going to advertise and we're going to build her website or their website. And so we built so many health and fitness websites, the first iteration of websites and the first community boards where, you know, followers of those brands could interact on their website. It was all like the wild, wild west. And it was fun. It was exciting. I was traveling all the time, being on the East Coast. Everything in health and fitness happens on the West Coast. I had to get an apartment in Vegas because I was spending way too much time between Salt Lake and LA. So I went halfway in the middle. So I was doing all this. And then I got recruited by eDiets to help them launch, which at that point was the largest weight loss company in the world. And they wanted a fitness component for their dieters. So they moved me to South Florida for a one-year project. So I'm running my Be Healthy Now. I moved to South Florida. So it's like shooting by the, do you get it? Like I was all over the place. And then 9/11 happened. I was 29 years old. I was living in South Florida. My whole family is up here in New England. And for a split second, I couldn't get home to my family when I wanted to. And all of a sudden, I said, life has to change. This isn't what I want to do. It's fun. I'm probably going to make it, but am I going to make it? What's coming next? Am I going to get private equity money to keep all of these things going? What's going to happen when eDiets is done with me in a year? So I started putting out my feelers thinking, what am I going to do? And I want to move back to New Hampshire. What am I going to do in New Hampshire, right? So that's when some of my friends from the first franchise company I worked with were getting involved with this franchise called Fran Choice, which is the business I'm a part of today and have been for 22 years. And I saw that business and I thought, wow, I can do that. That's like being a personal trainer. It's coaching people through a process that changes their life, and I can live anywhere in the world. And all I have to do is figure out how to create people who want to work with me. I can do this. I got it. So I started that business from South Florida. I moved home sometime a year or two years later after 9/11. And here I've been back in New Hampshire. I got married. I have kids. I live near my family. I've been gone from an average performing consultant in my franchise for 8 years to a history making consultant 1 year later, back in the recession of 2011. And I've been riding that history making performance and mastering the art of what I do for the last 13 years. So the reason I'm passionate about what I talk about is because franchising completely changed my life. I am a nutritional biochemist. I'm passionate about health and fitness, but ultimately I'm passionate about helping people, and I'm passionate about systems, freedom of my time, and making money. Mm-hmm. I applied that to a franchise and I've mastered it, and it completely changed my life. And I know that if you have the dream to change your life, we can find you the right franchise and you can live those dreams. I just know it because I'm living proof.
So there were two pieces of that story that sometimes I'll use the term a catalytic event, something that was a linchpin. Sure. You know, this was a moment in time that something occurred, and it was, and they intrigue me. So I'm going to follow up and ask a little bit more about them. and then we'll talk some business stuff. But one of them was you were going to medical school, or you were leaning towards, or you were heading towards medical school. Sounds like that was your trajectory. But it didn't sound like that's what you really wanted to do, because you were open to something else. Tell me a little bit more about that, because usually people that are going down that medical, first of all, they've been groomed. A lot of people have been groomed by either family or their grades, and they're going, and it's a commitment. But then something, I don't think it was a snap. Tell me just a little bit more about it, because I think it's part of the decision-making processes that all of us go through. So what can we learn from that situation or that moment in time that Kim had medical school to all of a sudden working for this company that then led to what we'll talk about later, which is the actual franchise?
Okay, well, so back up and let me tell one more story.
Oh, good. That's what stories.
Okay, so I grew up in the Miss America pageant organization. I entered in one, my first pageant, when I was 12 years old. I was Miss New Hampshire National preteen. I was 12 years old. That was 1984. 4 years later, I went on and became Miss New Hampshire 1988. And then 4 years later, I went on to become Miss New Hampshire 1992. During that time, I was competing in talent shows, essay contests, every school play that I could be in. I loved the stage. I wanted an audience. I grew up wanting an audience. At one point, I won a talent competition, and we were flown by a big talent agent to Atlantic City. And we sat in this hotel room, and the guy said to my parents, "We're going to make her a star. She's going to have to leave school. She's going to come to New York, and we're going to make her a star." Now, I was a straight A student, super conscientious. I was really into medical school. Like, my whole life, that was kind of like I played like with, you know, when other kids were doing other things, I was playing with like models of the human heart and the human brain. And I was always interested in the human body. And so anyway, that's where the rubber met the road for me. I was like, I'm not going to leave school. And looking back, I say to my mom, "My God, you don't let a 15-year-old make that decision. Like, you say go. And if you don't like it, you can come back to school." My mother's no, like nothing like this had ever happened. I look at some of the people that are massive stars now, and I think it could have been me. But anyway, so I was on that trajectory. So then I put my head down. I'm going to medical school, but a lot of pressure on myself, right? 16 years, I was a 4.0, summa cum laude, advanced, you know, all AP classes, a lot of pressure. And when I answered this classified ad, it was for a telemarketing job, because I did that in college and I was really good at it. I went to Boston College and I worked for the alumni fund. And if you picked up the phone, you were going to give me money. And so they started at work, they started dangling like carrots, you know, like you could win an extra $25, which when you're in college, that's a lot of money, right? And I was like so competitive. I'm like, I'm winning it. And every single night I was on the phone, I won every single bonus. So I answered this classified ad for a telemarketing job because I knew I had skill and I enjoyed it. So you apply that to now it's in a franchise company, and I'm watching all of these people just making money and living their dreams, and it's happy. The franchise environment is a culture of people helping people live their dreams. Like, the entire industry is supportive of people's dreams. And so you get a flavor of it. You'll find people in franchising never leave. Once you get into our universe, you very rarely go take a job somewhere else or go start a business outside, because it's such a happy place. And I'm just no different. Once I found this, I just wanted more of it. And so I pursued that. And it's kind of funny that it took me about 20 years until the pandemic to turn on the camera and build a social media business. So I was doing live events for the first 18 years. I would travel and host live events, and that's how I got people who wanted to work with me. So I still had my stage. But when the pandemic happened and I couldn't get on the airplane and go host my April event, I got in the fetal position for a little bit, because for 18 years, this is how I did it. But then I said, I can figure this out. I'm a smart girl. I can figure this out. Turned on that camera. And I'll tell you what, it is the greatest adaptation that ever happened to me. It's kind of funny that it took me all those years and a pandemic to wake up and be where I probably always should have been from day one, which is building the social media business.
But it's interesting. All right. I'm so glad I asked this follow-up question. I am married to a Miss America pageant person. And the story's even better than that. I was dating a local county pageant Miss America, and she introduced me to my wife, you know.
That's whatever. Great.
And I was smitten. It was love at first sight for me. And it was at a Miss America ball that Vanessa Williams was the reigning Miss America at that time.
Oh my gosh, back in 1984.
And 4 months later, she was not Miss America anymore. I've got a picture of her with myself with her. But my wife was a Miss University of Georgia and another local pageant. So I'm very familiar with that. And you know what? She says something very similar, that she just wanted to be on a stage. She's a singer. And she wanted to be in the Miss Georgia pageant because they had live orchestras. She always wanted to sing with a live orchestra. So I want to ask a little bit more to that. I think there's something with a personality that has a desire to be on a stage. And I don't think it's just all about the applause. What do you think it is that's been such a match for you? Here's the reason why I'm asking this. Because there are people out there, as we talk more business and all that, they're going to wonder if they're a good fit. And I think something that we're conversing about here is going to give them some clues. Does that make sense? So.
Well, it does. There are so many franchises that don't need you to be the face of it. My business is an anomaly.
Right.
It just suits my personality, you know? So what was your question?
The question was.
I'll tell you why. I don't know. This is what I would say in front of my parents, which would get a big rise out of both of them, because I'm a middle child and I have an older brother with special needs and a younger brother who could do no wrong. So in order for people to realize I was here, I had to be on the stage getting straight A's, overachieving. Hello, I'm here. Mm. Now, of course, we say this to my parents all the time. My parents are like, Kimberly, that is so not true. I'm like, you're only getting defensive because you know there's truth in there.
Yeah. And you know, that actually.
Birth order matters.
That would be my wife. She is performance oriented, has to always do well and all of that. And there's not a right or wrong with that. That's just a personality style. No. And you're right there. You know, the business and all that, we see all personality styles and all that. But it actually does feed into people that do really, really well at stuff, because she was both a middle child and a youngest child and an only child, because she had a younger brother that died of leukemia when she was 8. It was her father's second marriage, and she had older siblings that they later connected. And so she had all that going on. And so she is all about, she feels as if she's got to perform. So, you know, that's,
I don't know if that's true, but that's just what I make true when my parents are around and listening.
Yeah, I think there's, and it's not a bad thing. It's not a bad thing.
Yeah. Nobody in my family is like me. They're all engineers. They're all like, you know, data analysts. My brother works for a defense contractor. They're like nerdy people. And I'm like the one with the personality. That's what I say. I'm like, I don't, which one doesn't belong? Me.
It's cool how we all fit together though. Isn't that neat how God made all of us with these unique personalities and situations. So the other thing really cool about the Miss America pageant, I mean, when you're saying it, probably many people you talk to really don't understand what you're talking about. Well, I was a judge. I actually ran a local pageant. I was involved. I mean, I understand that whole system. And there's, like anything, there's pros and cons. We won't get into any of that.
Really, for me, Miss America represent the opportunity for personal development, right? That's really what it's about. It's a great playground for young girls to explore their talents, to develop interests, to build confidence and interview skills, lifelong skills that will help you be a person of excellence later in your life. That's all it did. You know, I mean, I did it to the max because I thrived in that environment. I'm super competitive and I just loved it, but it's not for everybody and definitely not for every personality.
Sure. Absolutely. And there's scholarship money involved too. I mean, there's money there.
Tons of scholarship money. I won so much. And you know what else I'll say? So when I was 12 and the first pageant I won, after that, my parents said, you know, if you want to continue doing this, we really can't afford to support this kind of hobby. It's a very expensive hobby. But my dad said, I will take you around our area and you can ask for sponsors. Now, I hated him at the time for that. But from the time I was 13 years old, I started walking into businesses, looking adults in the eye and selling myself and my dreams and asking people to support me. By the time I got to the Miss New Hampshire stage, I was the number one producer of sponsors and advertising dollars for the Miss New Hampshire pageant. So the years that I didn't win, they would still have me come and do host events because they knew that I could raise money. So listen, the skills that I have today are in part because of the person I was, you know, growing up and all the things I've done. And so it all works together, you know, like I think my parents didn't have enough money to help me buy a car, and I had to go get a little job at this little cafe on the weekends, bussing tables, and I made every single car payment. And, you know, at the time, did I love it? Probably not. But like looking back, I'm like, you know what? It's an awesome experience. I remember paying off that $3,000 car loan, you know, and like being like, I did it, and that sense of accomplishment. And all of those things probably make me a self-starter, more motivated, have skill as a business owner that I've just had because it's been a part of my life, my entire life, figuring out if I wanted to achieve something, how to make it happen.
Yeah. I love how things layer on in our lives to build us into that person.
But you don't need all of that to be a franchisee.
You
can come from corporate America where you've worked for the paycheck and you're just get sick of it. And now you're ready to create your own paycheck. So
sure.
It doesn't have to be the way it worked out for me. That's just the way that it worked
out. One more question. Happened to 9/11. I think you said you were 29 and that was a significant event because it kind of was sounded like a bit of a wake up call or something for you. Have you ever put thought into, this is one of these hypothetical questions that really are almost unanswerable, but I'm going to ask it anyway because I'm the guy asking the questions. Have you ever put thought into what if there hadn't been an event like a 9/11? Would you have gone through some burnout? Were you getting close to doing something different? Would you think you would have morphed into that? I mean, that's I know it's not a cut and dry question, but any thoughts on that?
Well, I might not have. I'm not a what if kind of a person anyway. Like I just keep moving forward. I mean, I was going to make it as an entrepreneur. I was making it, but the path I was on required me to attract big private equity dollars to really fund that. And when you look back, you think how many of those .coms really, you know, might I have made a bunch of money at a young age and then turn that into something else? Sure. Met somebody that opened a door and went a different way. But the way that my path has, you know, opened, like I've always felt like I'm exactly where I am meant to be. I am thriving and have been in my business for so many years. And the last couple of years, I've been a little bit antsy for more, you know, I made history 13 years ago, and I've been riding that and mastering that. And then about 2 or 3 years ago in 2020, I was like, I'm ready for the next mountaintop. And it took me a while to figure out what it was I wanted to build and then to get the gumption to move from my comfort zone into the uncertainty. But I started late last fall and really, you know, started building scale into what I'm doing. So now I'm both the franchisepreneur and the entrepreneur in 2024 because I'm building the first ever scaled version of what I do as a franchise consultant. But I'm only doing that, Tim, because you mentioned that I'm the mindset coach. My heart really is in what I call the blue ocean space in franchising, of helping people to the second yes. So the first yes is saying yes to the dream to own your business. And I've been doing that for 22 years. But the second yes is showing up to the first yes, showing up to yourself and your dreams. as a business owner. And that's where my heart really is. There are no really big names in business coaching within the franchise industry. I have a voice, I have a platform, I have relationships, and that's where I'm going. So here I've been, the franchisepreneur, but now I'm spinning out again as an entrepreneur to develop this whole new platform that I think could be kind of like my swan song to the franchise industry.
Well, you know, one of the things as a coach myself and as someone who's, I think I was wired to coach from early on in my life, it is, there's an aspect of coaching that's very one-on-one. And so scaling it is fascinating. We scaled a business in the real estate investing world, I think beyond what I ever thought we could. All that changed in 08. We don't want to get into that story here, but I think it's fascinating that you're doing that. I want to come back to that. I now want to circle back to just like the foundational entrepreneur franchise that we were discussing at the beginning. And I had a conversation with someone recently. They were on the podcast. I wish I could remember. I may include it down in the links. But I asked the question, are there some people that want to be an entrepreneur, but they may not have, and I don't, this is going to sound a little negative, and I know you're going to jump on me here, but that's okay. They may not have all the skill sets that the traditional entrepreneur that we have, or they may not want to do all of those pieces that you talked about earlier, or they may not need to do them. And so I actually wonder if there are a lot of people out there that are pursuing, quote unquote, what we would call maybe the do it by yourself, if it is to be, it's up to me, entrepreneur route, that really should be plugging into a bigger system. That might be a little bit of a softball question for you, but I mean, what do you see from people that have maybe tried entrepreneurship and maybe haven't succeeded, that then they step over into some of the things that you're doing, maybe more of a, I'm a systems engineer from Georgia Tech. So I look at franchises being systems. So they step into a system. Anyway, I'll stop talking. Just respond to whatever you want to with what I just said.
Yeah, no, I mean, former entrepreneurs are the easiest people, even if they were successful, they're the easiest people to convince of the value proposition of a franchise, because starting a business once in your lifetime is enough for most people, because it's a lot of hard work, right? All that figuring out part, it takes time, it takes money, it takes trial and error, it takes blood, sweat, and tears. That when you pay a franchise fee and know that you have ready-made access to things that already work, and you just get to put your head down and just start executing. Now, it's not dummy-proof. It still requires an owner with a brain to show up. It still requires the owner of the franchise to grow into the role. Because many times people coming from a corporate background, when I'm matching people to a franchise, I am looking at their core skills. Were you an HR professional? Were you an outside sales guy, right? So we can take what you liked about your corporate skill set and then apply that to how you're going to spend your time as a business owner in your franchise. But if you're going to be the business owner, you can't just be the sales guy. Because if you ever want to have scale, you're going to have to hire some salespeople. So you're going to have to learn a management skill or two, right? You're going to have to learn how to work a P&L if you've never done that before. And that's okay. It's a growth mindset. I always say that owning a business is just a playground for personal and professional growth. And to the extent that you succeed at the personal and professional growth, you get the financial growth. Everybody wants the financial growth, but I'm like, the receiving part only happens after you've given. So you have to be the one giving. Now, the franchise system is going to teach you how to very quickly give, especially if you're stepping into a brand that has brand equity, right? When you open your doors, people already know what it is. And so they start coming in. But if you're entering as a pioneering brand, you know, bringing a new brand to your market, that name brand recognition may not be there. So you might have to be a little bit more of the storyteller. But you also probably have a greater exit strategy when the world wakes up and everybody wants that new brand and you have the most established locations in a great part of your community. That's when you have built the greatest exit strategy for yourself in a franchise. So when you look at, okay, what are the goals of this business? If someone says, I want to build something and sell it in 7 to 10 years, entrepreneurship is probably not the best path. You may spend half of that just trying to figure out how to make money. Never mind scale to build wealth, right? And if you're part of a franchise, the 7 to 10 year period aligns perfectly with your franchise agreement. Most franchise agreements are 10-year agreements, right? So you get in, you get up your own learning curve, you get your first million within a couple of years, you start doubling that, you build real value, you add teams of people, you start scaling it, you have brand equity now because the brand is maturing. And this is where private equity dollars come in and say, we'll buy your stores, right? Or your locations, your territories. This is where you just hire a business broker and you get a 3 or 4 multiple of what you've built. If it's just a good, solid business that has served its purpose in your life and you're ready to move on. Maybe you decide during that time period, it's not, I don't really want to sell it. I want to give it to my kids. Okay, cool. You have that option too. So it really comes back to, Tim, like when you say you want to own a business and you define success for me, you talked about defining success. I ask everybody, what is your definition of success look? What does it feel like? When do you get there? How are you going to know you're there? Right? And then I bet with my knowledge and relationships and franchising, I serve up the options based on the business being the vehicle driving those outcomes for your life, personally, professionally, and financially.
Okay. There's at least 3 things that I want to do before we finish up here. I want to talk about the person that is looking at being a business owner. Maybe they've been a business owner in the past, entrepreneur, whatever, and they are intrigued and interested in a franchise. And I'm going to tell you all 3 things I'm going to ask you now, and then we're going to take each one. Then I want to talk about how one can determine a match. You mentioned match earlier, and I want to talk more about that because what I like to understand is all the different types of franchises that are currently out there. I know you can't list out the 2,000-ish or whatever that you rep, but I like to know. I mean, I recently ran across someone. Sometimes I work with the owner that is attempting to franchise, like a pressure washing business that I'm going, pressure washing business? Mm-hmm. That's intriguing. Or someone who puts coatings on garage floors that are in the process of developing a franchise. I'm like, going, that actually is pretty big and all. So those type things. And then the last thing I want to talk about is the scalability type question. So those are the 3 categories. I think I'm subject to change my mind. But anyway, let's talk about, and I don't know if there's a profile. I don't know if there's a type person. I kind of feel like if I bring this up, you're going to say, no, anyone. But I do want to know, I love the positive aspect, but you can tell me I'm trying to dig. I do want to know, is there anyone that if they come to you and they say a few things, you kind of go, ooh, they're going to be a tough fit. You can tell I'm trying to get you to say negative things.
I'll tell you a good story. So like truly, business ownership is not for everybody, Tim. And it is not my job to play God with your life. Yeah. I'm never going to tell you if this is the right thing for you. I'm going to teach you what are the questions to ask, who to ask them to, and how to figure it out for yourself. But here's why I don't play God with people's lives. This happened years ago when I was a very young consultant. I met a guy, and to your point, that's how I felt. The first time I met this guy, I was like, dear Lord, I do not want this on my conscience. This guy is never going to be successful. What am I going to do? So I called one of my good friends at one franchise, and I said, hey, I'm going to send you a lead, and I need you to challenge him and help him figure out he should not own a business. Now, my process is to show 3 to 5 concepts. I only showed this guy 1. Because I wanted to get rid of him for his sake, not for mine, right? I only get paid if you say yes to a franchise, so it doesn't benefit me. Yeah. But I didn't want it on my conscience. So I served up the guy. The franchisor challenged him. A few weeks later, he called me back. He's like, Kim, I can't figure out a reason not to award this guy a franchise, right? Like every challenge I put in front of him, he just keeps rising above it. Well, that guy today, he's in Maine. In a single territory, in a system of 900 franchisees, and he's in the top 25 performers, not 25%, Top 25 out of 900 people. He has a multi-million dollar business. So who am I to play God with anybody's life? Now, that guy used his franchise opportunity to change his life. I'm sure he had a ton of personal growth to go through based on when I first met him. I think he was clinically depressed. He was totally introverted. Like all of the things that you're like, how are you going to own a business if you want to be customer facing or even manage people, right? Like he just didn't exude that to me. Now, we didn't have Zoom back then, so this was all over the phone. I might have missed some things, but his tone, his, you know, energy, all of that was way off for me. But I put him in front of a really solid franchisor and he followed their systems and he worked it out and he made it his own. And here he is today living his dream. So I am not going to tell you if you're suited to own a franchise. You're going to have to figure that out for yourself. Because on the flip side, I've definitely worked with people where I was like, oh, this is my guy or this is my girl. You know, and then 2 years later, the franchisor calls and says, hey, you know, did you hear from so-and-so? And I never do. I'm like, mom, nobody ever calls me when it's going bad. And unless it's really bad and they really want to complain. But, you know, I think the reason, Tim, people don't call me is I'm really big on accountability. Like this is a world of ownership. And that kind of falls deaf on ears sometimes because in a franchise, the franchisor is a very easy scapegoat. And I get it because I'm in a franchise. And for 8 years, I was waiting for somebody else to do it for me. I was waiting for everything else to change so I could have a better business. But it wasn't until I woke up and said, nobody's coming. Nobody's going to do it for you, Kim. You got to do it for yourself. And 1 year later, everything was different, not just for me, but for my entire industry. Because of what I created. So the power of the mind, once you figure out, if you're waiting on the world to change, that's a song. Thank you, John Mayer. If you're waiting on the economy, if you're waiting on the franchisor, if you're waiting on anybody to do for you what only you can do for yourself, you're going to be waiting forever, which is the same conversation I have with people when they're worried about a recession. I'm like, if you're worried about it, you're going to worry about it forever. So there's two ways to look at it. If you think we're in a recession, buy now. It's the hardest it's ever going to be for you. And when it's over, you're going to be like, I got muscle. I never have to worry about a recession again because guess what? If you're going to be a business owner, it's going to come back around. Now you're like, check that off the list. Don't have to worry about it. Or don't ever buy a business because you can't control the economy. And so if you think you have to in order to be successful, probably best that you don't own a business.
I do agree. I mean, in my two steps. One of the things we try to do, we got pandemics. There's always something going on. I study history a lot and there's never a perfect time. There is one thing that I loved about what you said though, and maybe I'm going to get you to say just a little bit more about it. You said that number one, you didn't judge the guy. And I like that because I've been in very similar situations where I thought this person going to be a home run, this person not so sure, and I have been wrong also. I think we do get sort of good at it, but not great. But you put them in, this is me using my term again, you put them in the system and you sort of let the system work it out. So there's got to be, I guess, the term I use is people qualify themselves or disqualify themselves. You introduce the guy and this franchisor went through their process. They probably have a process to make sure they've got a good match too. And so talk a little bit about those processes or just anything you want to say about it, because that seems important also for each type of franchise or business that's out there. They probably have their own set of criteria or things that they might be looking for. Would that be correct?
Totally true. And if they don't have a process, it's a huge red flag. I mean, look, you're buying a franchise, which is a proven process. If the development team doesn't have a process to teach you about the process, red flag.
And it's it's not just does the check clear. That's not the only process, right?
Not in my world. Right. I'm sure in the big bag world of franchising, there are those franchises that will just take your money and not really care. but not with the what I call like my little boutique world here in franchising. You know, we try to really pride ourselves working with the best of the best franchisors. So yes, it's my job. If you come to me to say, I want to explore franchising, it's my job to put you in play, if you will, to use your words, to help you learn what you don't know so you can figure out for you if this is the right thing for you. So the first two things that people have to figure out is money or money and time or timing. But in my process, because I've been doing this for 22 years, we're going to bring the elephant out, which is money, in our very first in-depth call. So some people disqualify themselves right after that. And that's why I've learned to do it that way. Not to be mean, but because if you want to make it about money, let's make it about money in 30 minutes, not 6 weeks, right? We're going to lay it out. You're going to understand what every franchise business costs. And listen, I don't ever believe that anybody wants to disqualify themselves. But sometimes the money is a fact. If you don't have enough, it's not the right time. So let's just uncover that now. And you're going to go away with wind in your sails, not defeated, because you're going to know exactly how much money to save and when to call me back. I will work for your future lead all day long, right? No, that's awesome. And you're going to stay connected to me because I invested some time to help you figure something out that's important to you, right? If you want to know, like, why would you do that, Kim? Because it's the right thing to do. And because, you know, I don't have to kill what I eat, what I kill today. I can be the farmer just planting, you know, working the land, waiting for you to come back. I've had so many people come back in 3 years or 5 years when they were finally ready. Mm. Now, the other thing is time or timing. So a business needs a certain amount of time by an owner, and different businesses need varying amounts of time, some very full time, some less, but it does need time. And so if you're super, super busy with kids and W-2s and nothing can be compromised, you're going to figure out very quickly that there's no time in your life. And if you're not willing to prioritize the business, then it's not the right time. And then other time, it's just timing, and timing is usually more coordinated with money. But so in my process, Tim, those two things get covered in the first 2 weeks. So I guarantee you, if you are not ready for this, you are going to figure this out in 2 weeks. And I'm also helping people, giving them an out. Because there's no obligation. You are not offending me if you take yourself out of the process. You can't know if franchising is for you unless you're willing to ask questions and go down the path. The vast majority of people I work with will not invest in a franchise, right? So people think, I think I'm wasting your time. I'm like, don't think so much. This is not right for everybody. If I told you that I'm 1 out of 5 or 1 out of 4, whatever my 1 out of 3, whatever the number is, let's pick 1 out of 5. That means 4 out of 5 people that I'm talking to today are not the person I'm looking for. And you could be that person, but I don't know. You're the one who's going to present whether you're in the group of 4 or you're in the group of 5. You're not 1 out of 5.
Right.
So stop trying to manipulate it. Just let the process work. Now, if you're going to go on and become an owner, it takes me about 1 to 2 months to have you through the franchisor's process, funneled down to one concept, financing all lined up, all of your questions answered, managing your fears, your highs and lows, getting your spouse on board. That's about a 1 to a 2 month process.
So if someone begins going through that process and you know, it looks still promising, tell me, and this is, you know, I don't know if this is a list, I don't know if this is stories, but give me some examples of businesses that are now franchise type businesses. And I know you work with a lot of them, you're matching up, but I'm a business junkie. I love hearing, and I'm seldom surprised, but surprise me with something that says, Tim, did you know that blank is now a franchisable model or something like that? You could do whatever you want with it. But I just love to hear the different things that people are now with that system, with that structure, using that to expand and grow businesses and allow other people to be owners along the way.
It's really the most fun part of what I do is just the gasps that people have when they're like, you know, but hopefully I eliminate that by the time we get to presentation by massaging this conversation when we're in our consultation together. But one of the most fun runs I've ever had with a company was called Smash My Trash. Have you ever heard of this brand, which is a commercial trash compactor? Ooh. So it's a simple operation with an inside salesperson and a CDL licensed driver and maybe one other person on the truck. It's a expensive equipment, but great tax deduction. And you literally go into businesses that have dumpsters and you put this huge rolling pin down into the dumpster. And the thing is so strong, it can if you think of stepping on a Coke can and flattening it like a pancake, it can take a steel drum and flatten it like a pancake. But it could be a hotel, it could be a construction site, it could be like a machinist shop where they're just throwing all kinds of stuff in. And this is a green company because it's reducing the haul away volume, right? The fewer times that you have to come and remove and dump this thing because it's full for me. So that was one of the most fun runs we've ever had. But I love the epoxy company that you mentioned. We have multiple versions of that in franchising. We have a franchise, we have a couple of brands in franchising that paint parking lots. So the big guys come in and roll out the cement, but they don't like to come back with the templated equipment and actually paint the lines. But think about apartments and HOAs and shopping plazas and schools, you know, and healthcare facilities. And even as state and county regulations change around how many handicap or disabled spots you have, then those lines have to be repainted. And so, but then even by weather, you know, events, by sun and rain and snow, those parking lots have to be repainted. So who would know that that's a franchise? Power washing, fencing. The home services space is an awesome space, like low investment, low fixed costs, recession resistant, because we're going to always spend money to, you know, maintain our properties, whether it's inside the home or outside the home. Senior care, pet services have exploded since 2020. Grooming especially, but all kinds of businesses in the pet space, from boarding to grooming to Whole Foods for pets to, I mean, the list of options is completely endless. The anti-aging space is another really fun space that I'm having a blast with because personally, I'm totally into it. So like the cryotherapy, the IV drip bars, all of that, you know, that's making a huge wave. Anti-aging skincare to beauty brands. I mean, that's like the most recession resistant thing you could ever do in your life, because women, I always say, look, it is like when Nancy Pelosi, I don't remember, I'm not a Nancy Pelosi fan, but I don't know if you remember when during the pandemic she was caught getting her hair colored at the time when nobody could go to the salon. And I was like, you go, girl, right? She was just doing what the rest of us wanted to do. Like, we women are not going to stop spending money on our hair, our skin, our nails, our lashes, you know, things that give us that confident feel or edge that help us present our best selves to the world. You cannot go wrong in a beauty industry. And so those businesses are always booming, and men own them, because men, look, if you have a wife, daughter, girlfriend, you might see the credit card bill and so be like, well, I'm not the avatar, but I know the people who are, and I know how much those services cost and what women are spending. So there's just endless options if your mind is open to it.
That's fascinating, because like you said earlier, you know, food and retail is traditionally probably what a lot of people have as their paradigm. I remember when we were in New Zealand, my wife and I spent a few months over in New Zealand a few years ago, and there was a Subway on every corner and there was a Pizza Hut just about everywhere, and Burger King. And I'm sitting here thinking, gosh, this Subways are everywhere. And, you know, I think they probably threw too many of those out there, but that's a whole nother topic. It is fascinating, and I love hearing the stories of businesses that are able to be, you know, the one model, but then also to scale to be a bigger and to take advantage of the system. And so that's one of my final questions here, and this is the scale. One of the things, I guess this could be a mistake that I see some people make in franchise, is they'll use, I'm going to use negative language, I'm going to say this, that people will buy a job and they're not that much different than what they were in either their corporate gig or whatever they were doing before. And I think if they're just one and done, that may be the case. But you talked about scaling, you talked about having multiples. I went to high school with a family that by the time we were in high school, they had 13 McDonald's, and now she's the daughter owns them, and they were the most successful people around. They were the people that actually had money. So talk about I guess you get involved with that with coaching people. It's like how to go from the one to the many. Talk about that briefly as we finish up here with another question or two, because I think that's the picture that a lot of people need to get. It's not just in and working in one, but it's beginning to oversee the scale of multiples.
Yes. And if you do come in to franchising, I think you have to be clear. It's easier if you're clear from the beginning that you want to be more of the empire builder. There are definitely franchise options that want owner operators. They want you in it. They want you doing it, sleeves rolled up. But that's not really the class of franchises that I'm working with most of the time, just based on how I prospect and the type of people that I'm attracting to me, which are busy like dentists or doctors, and they own practices, or they're W-2 CEOs or high-level managers or outside salespeople, medical device people, but they're looking for a way out of trading their time for money. So to your point, I'm not going to go buy a business and then trade my time for money over there in my own business. That didn't get me anywhere, right? More headache, actually, right? So you have to kind of connect yourself to the right franchisor that's looking for you. They have the skill and in their training to help you visualize going from starting with a general manager and then adding that team as you go. But as an owner, what's on you is the owner that you enter as is not going to be the owner you need to be to go from 2 to 3, 3 to 4, right? A single unit owner starting entering a market has one mindset. And that's why it's very helpful if you kind of come in, and most of my people, I coach them. If you want those additional stores, you've got to put the pin in the map up front, because there's no first right of refusal. The franchisor is not waiting for you to come back in a year and be like, well, I wanted that territory. That's sold, right? So you have the development agreement where you're committing to opening 3 stores over the next 3 years. And so your mindset is first on getting all 3 stores open. It's the growth mindset, and then it's the mastery mindset. And then that way you're looking at all 3 stores producing an ROI versus needing any one store to be the end all be all. And just like in any portfolio, the more diversified you are, the safer the whole thing is, right? And so it just works better. The mindset, you're less like micromanaging because you're a bigger thinker. But again, don't hear me say that if this isn't you, there's not an option in franchising for you. There are absolutely options where owners start out in it. Like Budget Blinds, one of the most successful franchises I've ever worked with. Pretty much everybody buys that to have no team. But now they have people that do $200,000, $300,000 a month in window treatments. They are not without a team. But they started where they started, and then they saw how it could grow. And little by little, they became the owner who wanted to take on more installers and a couple of designers and maybe even open a small showroom to carry your most, you know, the products you sell the most and have a bigger presence in the community. But Budget Blinds as a franchise is the largest mobile window treatment franchise in the world. So that's the adaptation that people who wanted scale grew it into. It's not how you have to be successful in that franchise. So this is why if you're out there on your own trying to match an opportunity to your goals, I don't know how you do it. You need someone like me. I mean, I'm obviously biased, but I also just don't get how you would do it. I know what franchisors you can lean into that have the structure in place for you to validate with other owners who are going to resonate with you, right? If you want to be a multi-unit owner and you validate with a franchise where everybody is single focused, it doesn't resonate. Those aren't your people. And in franchising, that's ultimately what you're doing is buying people, right? You're buying systems, but you're buying leadership and culture and vision and a mastermind of other franchisees who can help you and work alongside of you. So if you enter into a franchise where It's a system, a culture where they are encouraging 2 and 3 units on average, and that's who you want to be, then you're going to align with those people and how they started their business, where they are now. It's going to be more in sync with your vision. So, and that's, again, I cut through all of that clutter. You don't have to figure that out, or you just get to take it for granted. I got the relationships. I'm going to narrow this down to 3 to 5 for you. So we're going to hit the ground running with exactly the right models that match the goals that you have and the owner you want to be.
It's very good. I'm pressed for time here, but I want to ask one question, and I'm just going to kind of ask for as quick of a response as you can. I'm looking for just a mindset tip for the person that's listening in. And it could be franchise leaning. It could just be business owner. We have a lot of business owners, leaders, people in ministry, business, all that. Just, I know you're big on mindset. I listen to your Daily Grind over on your podcast some and things like that, that you're putting out. Just if you could just leave just a quick mindset tip for the listener before we finish up with a couple of things, what would that be?
Well, I think the number one thing that holds people back, well, it's fear, but disguised as limiting beliefs, right? And what we have to always remember is that we are the creators of our own reality. So what you firmly believe to be true, you will make that your reality. So if someone, the way that it applies in what I do, people say, well, that business isn't going to work in my area. I'm like, okay, so it works everywhere else, just not in your area? Okay. So I'm not going to really challenge you too hard on that, other than to go out and validate with a lot of other franchisees in other areas to see how it's working for them everywhere. But if you can't move past that, you should not move forward. Because if that is your firm belief, this will work everywhere, but not where I live, you're 100% correct. You will go out and you will make that true. So this world of business ownership is about accountability, but accountability to your mindset. The last thing I'll say, Tim, is this is my success equation. Success equals 20% strategy and 80% mindset. How you think, how you talk, and how you act has a greater impact. And I know this to be true because for the first 8 years, I was an average performer. 1 year later, I built the first 7-figure business in my industry and changed history. I was the same me. My strategy was the same in terms of the franchise process, but my mental strategy completely changed, and that changed everything, including history.
Very cool. Man, I'm glad I asked that question. Kim, where can people find you? I know you've got podcasts, you got books, where do you want people to go if they want to connect with you after this conversation we've had for right at an hour here?
I love it. So please go to thedailycoach.com, D-A-L-Y. Right when you land on the page, there's a free quiz that helps you figure out if you are fit to own a franchise. Now, you've already heard a lot of the answers, but take the quiz because then you will get my free ebook on how to pick a winning franchise.
Very good. We'll make sure we include that down in the notes. Kim, we are seek, go create, those three words. My final question for you. I'll let you choose or allow you to choose or force you to choose one of those words over the other two. Seek, go, or create, and why?
So easy for me. You just got to go, baby. I am so the entrepreneur that like I'm like building this new company and I have all these people behind me who are like, no, we need to do this. We need to have this. And I'm like, no, we need to make money and we're going to perfect as we go. We go first and we perfect later. I am absolutely a doer. Go make it happen. Overthinking is analysis paralysis.
That does not surprise me. Kim, I appreciate it very much. Thanks for joining us. Make sure you go check out her stuff. I think there's a lot of value. Definitely if you have interest in franchise or anything like that. But I just think I find value in the mindset and the way she thinks and the energy she brings to what she does. Thanks for joining us today. We are Seek, Go, Create. We release new episodes every Monday. Your support does mean the world to us. If you like what you're hearing here, you can now tip us, buy me coffee, sip a whiskey if that's what you're prone to do. You can go offer financial support at seekgocreate.com/support. You can also leave comments, which we might read on the air if you leave a comment there. Thanks again for being here. Continue being all that you were created to be.